Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carville. Coming up, the first Garda recruitment in 5 years. What sort of force will they be joining?
And Garda Síochána is a policing agency of the people, working for the people, with the consent of the people, in the context of loyalty to the organisation above loyalty to the truth. I cannot and do not and will never accept that.
Debating the Gardaí, after the news from Una O'Hagan.
Good evening. There's concern for the future of 170 jobs at a company in Cork which provides specialised insurance services. Assurance Services Ireland informed staff today that it was conducting a review of its Irish operation. Our Southern editor Pascal Sheehy reports.
Assurant Solutions is a Fortune 500 company which has 14,500 employees worldwide and assets of $29 billion. The company has had a call centre in Cork since 1999. 170 staff there are involved in customer care and the management of claims relating to mobile phone insurance. In October, Assurant Solutions completed the acquisition of mobile phone insurance provider Lifestyle Services Group, which is based in Crewe in the UK. Assurant is now proposing to move its operations in Cork, as well as its European headquarters based in Windsor in the UK, to Crewe. Staff in Cork were told at this afternoon's meeting the facility there may close. Assurant Solutions says it will enter talks with staff in Cork affected by today's announcement. Those talks are expected to last for at least a month. Pascal Sheehy, RTE News, Cork.
The government has confirmed that Bord Gáis Energy is to be sold to a consortium headed up by Centrica, the company behind British Gas. They will pay over €1.1 billion for the Bord Gáis retail operation, a power station and some wind farms. Fianna Fáil Senator Thomas Byrne has questioned the sale price, saying the taxpayer is not getting full value.
This is Fine Gael ideology. Labour is delivering it, and we believe they're delivering it for about €500 million less than what it was originally worth. Where taxpayer is not getting full value, and we think this sale requires a lot further analysis before it proceeds.
A pedestrian in his late 60s has died after he was hit by a car in County Cork. The incident happened at around 6:45 this evening on the Carrigtwohill to Middleton Road. The road has been reduced to one lane while a technical examination is carried out. The weather forecast staying mild overnight but very blustery with scattered outbreaks of rain. Lowest temperatures between 8 and 11 degrees in a strong southwest wind. Friday will be cooler than of late with widespread showers. The showers will be heavy and frequent across the north and west, along with strong gusty southwest winds. Highest temperatures 9 to 11 degrees. That's all for now. The next summary will be at 11.
Una, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. The first recruitment to the Gardaí in 5 years began today. And apparently in that time, around 30,000 people have put their names forward to join. Only 300 will be selected. What sort of force, though, will they be joining? It's been a bruising few weeks for the Gardaí after the Smithwick report found that there had been collusion between the Gardaí in Dundalk and the IRA in the murders of two senior RUC men. Judge Smithwick also said that he believed the Gardaí to this day prioritises the protection of the good name of the force over the protection of those who seek to tell the truth. Well, the Smithwick report came at the end of a number of controversies involving the Gardaí during the year. Donal O'Hurley reports.
Few could argue it's been a bit of an annus horribilis for An Garda Síochána. A 7-month-long investigation into the quashing of penalty points went on for most of the first half of the year, and it came to a head in May.
Four TDs, Claire Daly, Joan Collins, Mick Wallace and Luke Flanagan, claimed that there were thousands of motorists who had penalty points cancelled in the dossier. The deputies published 20 examples. There were no names or locations used, but they included a superintendent terminating tickets for the wives of other Gardaí, a driver who previously had speeding tickets quashed, a motorist who had tickets for no tax, speeding and using a mobile phone, all quashed by the same Garda, and a number of motorists involved in serious or fatal accidents having speeding tickets terminated. And Joan Collins, TD, also named three people under privilege in the Dáil who she claimed had points cancelled. They were a journalist, a sports star and a judge.
But there was no corruption in the force, said an internal Garda investigation, and only three of 113 guards named were disciplined. Alan Shatter went on the offensive. The Gardaí needed discretionary powers, he said, when they gave out penalty points, and this wouldn't be changing, even if the report found that 10,000 of them had been quashed.
That's 2.5% of the total of 1.4 million. The Gardaí have a discretionary power to terminate penalty points and fix ticket charges, which is correct. Many of the reasons for termination are very simple and straightforward. That the car isn't yours, the registration number is incorrect. That the vehicle might have been an ambulance on an emergency drive. It could be a Gardaí car. It may well be the car was stolen. There's a whole range of reasons.
Roll on July, and the Office of the Garda Ombudsman published a report after investigating allegations of Garda brutality from a student protest back in 2010. The reason for the delay? Well, the Gardaí were accused of at the very least dragging their heels on producing documents and video footage of the day. And the report went further. It said that the information that was provided was, quote, misleading and later proved to be incorrect. Kieran Fitzgerald from the Ombudsman's office explained.
When Gardaí are involved in policing a public protest or a public demonstration, and if they feel it appropriate to deploy force, then they fill in what's called colloquially a batten report or a use of force report. We were told there were none of these available at the time. It turned out, subsequent to the communication to us in July 2011, that no individual reports existed. It turned out, almost a year later, that actually several of these, tens and tens, up to 60 of them, actually did exist.
Roll on the beginning of December, and the Smithwick Tribunal found there was probable Garda collusion in the murder of two RUC officers in 1989. William Buchanan, the son of one of the officers, reacted.
The findings of Judge Smithwick are both incredible and shocking, and confirm the existence of a mole in Dundalk Station. This led to my father's death and that of his colleague Harry Breen. I, on behalf of my sister and the wider Buchanan family, wish to place on record our appreciation for the diligence and integrity of Judge Peter Smithwick and his team.
And Garda Commissioner Martin Callanan offered no resistance.
I am horrified that any member of the Garda Síochána would be involved in colluding with the IRA. I accept the conclusions arrived at by the chairman of the tribunal, and to think that any member of my force would engage with the IRA at any level is beyond comprehension.
A frank admission from a changed force, you might say, but just days ago, after a court ruling in May saying that Ian Bailey should be given documents relating to his investigation by Gardaí following the murder of Sophie Toscan de Plantier, we had this.
RTE has learned that the Garda Commissioner has asked the High Court to prevent the release of thousands of documents as part of a lawsuit relating to the death of Sophie Toscan de Plantier. The documents include an internal report into how Gardaí handled the investigation into her murder in 1996.
Ian Bailey met with members of the Oireachtas this very day to outline his case, meaning that the Gardaí have spent almost the entirety of 2013 mired in some high-profile controversy or another. Is it a changed force? Well, to borrow a legal term, the jury is out.
That was Donal O'Herlihy reporting. Well, to debate the Gardaí tonight in studio, in our Cork studio, we have Fine Gael TD David Stanton. He's chairman of the Oireachtas Justice Committee. Here in Dublin, Michael Finucane, solicitor and chairman of the Law Society's Human Rights Committee. John Mooney is security correspondent with the Sunday Times. And we're also joined by Damien McCarthy, former president and executive officer of the Garda Representative Association. He's been a Garda officer for 11 years. You're all very welcome indeed. Michael Finucane, I'll start with you. In general, do you have confidence that if there is a wrongdoing in the Gardaí, that it is will be thoroughly investigated and justice done?
I'm afraid not. I don't think the willingness to investigate certain types of wrongdoing or malpractice within an Garda Síochána is investigated with anything like the vigour that the Gardaí investigate ordinary citizens. And it is only in the case of extremely serious infraction or infraction that some way offends against general everyman type sensibilities that one sees the full vigour of the force being brought to bear on someone who has been found to have committed a crime. Beyond that, I don't think the force is very good at investigating itself. In some cases, it is woefully inadequate in the way it goes about its business.
Is the evidence there to back up what you're saying?
Yes, I think it is. Most notably, the conclusions of the Ombudsman, the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission, and its verdict on the force as delivered earlier this year. It ranges their experience of trying to get information in order to pursue investigations, which they have a statutory entitlement and obligation to pursue, lists everything from delay and prevarication right through to outright obstruction and questioning of their methods and requests for information, citing things like relevance of requests and so forth, when you know these issues ought to be given or ought to be dealt with as a matter of form. Questions should be answered and information provided for the asking, and protocols agreed between the Commission and the force followed, and clearly they are not being followed.
Damien McCarthy, do you dispute much of that?
I actually dispute a large amount of what has just been said, because the proof is actually there. Since 2007, we had the implementation of the Garda Síochána Act of 2005, and I disagree with perhaps nearly everything that has just been said in terms of the Gardaí not being answerable and not being accountable. The legislation is quite clear and quite specific. And not alone for just criminal matters. If one even looks, and I'm glad Michael is here because he is a solicitor, he'll be well aware of the fact that not alone does the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission have vast powers in that Section 98 of the Garda Síochána Act, allegations of criminal misconduct. They have all the powers, the necessary powers to ensure that allegations of criminal misconduct can be investigated properly. And I'll go further, because there's a further section in that Act which caters for any member of the Garda Síochána whom delays, whom obstructs, or whom interferes. That extra power is there for the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission. So when the complaint is made, the allegation of wrongdoing, the legislation is there. So I don't accept either when the Ombudsman says that Gardaí are delaying, Gardaí are obstructing, or Gardaí are interfering. Why don't they utilise the legislation? Because even if you peruse the reports which have been published annually since 2007, one has to ask the question, how many guards have been arrested with the thousands of allegations of criminal misconduct? One. To my knowledge, one. Because what's happening in the ground, and I have vast experience of it in Dublin City Centre, in the division I'm in, every guard complies voluntarily to provide cautioned interviews, either in the station or in the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission's office. People have been providing, guards have been providing witness statements and their account. If not, there is vast powers, as I say, in Section 39 of the Act, where there's a duty and onus on the member of the Garda Síochána to account.
Okay. Would you want to come back on that, Michael?
Well, one would need to look at the way in which the Ombudsman approaches the Garda response to their investigations. I mean, they say quite clearly that requests to the Garda Síochána for information necessary to advance investigations were not being completed within the time frame of 30 days agreed in protocols concluded under the Garda Síochána Act 2005. In one case, and I'm quoting here obviously, in one case we waited 542 days for a request to be completed, and the vast majority were well over the agreed time limits, often by excessive periods. Now, the Commission does not mention anything about Gardaí being held to account, which should be happening first and foremost within the force itself. And clearly, when you're being given the runaround by a large organisation like an Garda Síochána, the idea that you would then sit down and start to put in the work to try and discipline or even prosecute somebody for delay when you can't even get the information you asked for in the first place is not a confidence-building safeguard at all.
John Mooney, I'll ask you the same question. Do you have confidence that if there is a wrongdoing in the Gardaí, that it will be investigated and justice done?
Depends on who the guard is, to be perfectly frank with you. To understand the way these matters are dealt with in the force, you've got to understand the nature of the force, whom the allegation has been made against, whom what type of allegation has been made, and if indeed if there's a history of this or is there any substance to it. So you end up situation, certainly, like I mean, corruption happens in every area of society. It's not something that's unique to guards. And again, I'm saying, as a journalist who's investigated a lot of cases of this in the past 15 years, I've high respect for the force, because I know most people in it are equally as horrified at wrongdoing in it as I would be, or any right-minded person would be. Young Gardaí who maybe breach a minor regulation or something like that, I've seen them having the book thrown at them quite unfairly in many cases. And then I've seen other people who are more senior, have maybe been promoted by the right grouping within Garda headquarters, who've engaged in the most astonishing levels of wrongdoing. They've managed to get away with all sorts of stuff, not just cases that are out in the public domain, but other type of activities, which are completely illegal and criminal and everything else. And this is being sort of discreetly dealt with within force management.
What sort of things, can you say?
Threats against people, illegal surveillance on people, illegal technical surveillance on people, lots of other types of issues as well, different types of wrongdoing. So it's important to say, like, this isn't an epidemic in the guards or anything like that. The problems, these type of problems, when they arise, become a big issue because there's usually a failed attempt to cover it up. And someone who may be a victim is getting a bit balchy and decides to go public with it, maybe puts in a formal complaint, then it becomes a different matter that is kind of almost out of control and inevitably ends up in the press, or in some cases doesn't. Mm. So it depends on who it is. It depends on who they're aligned to, who has sponsored their promotions within the guards. And is there a, when these matters happen, when they become entered into the public domain, it becomes a case as well. Who's promoted them? Are they going to be implicated in this? Did someone turn a blind eye to this? And which way is this going to go? And that's something that unfortunately it's alive and well in the guards, but it's also alive in other sections of society and big organisations. But it certainly, as someone who works with Gardaí and customs and people in the security services every day of the week, that I think it's important to state that these, while it's there and it happens, and it usually happens because the systems aren't there to stop it from happening, and if they are, they're being ignored. It's not something that we're not dealing with the Mexican police or anything like that. I mean, I've relied on the guards for personal security. Unfortunately, in the past, I've been in situations where I've very much relied on the force. Mm-hmm. And, most people who join the guards do so because they believe in justice and they believe in law and order. And they since they were kids, wanted to become guards. Not everyone, but certainly, most people are decent people and they're going about doing a difficult job. But there are pockets and these matters do arise.
And David Stanton in Cork, you're welcome to the programme. And are you concerned by what you hear there from John Mooney?
Well, I would agree with John that the vast, vast majority of Gardaí are hardworking. They are patriotic. They put their lives on the line. They put their bodies on the line. And they provide a fantastic service to the people of this country. Obviously, any kind of malpractice cannot and should not be tolerated. Now, in 2012, there were 169 Gardaí found in breach of discipline. And they received warnings and cautions up to the extent of €62,000. And a number were suspended and dismissed. So certainly action is taken, but we can never ever be complacent about things like this. The Gardaí have been given a lot of powers by the Dáil, by the Houses of the Oireachtas, on behalf of the people. And we must be vigilant all the time that the powers that they have are used properly, and that the Gardaí themselves are monitored and there's proper oversight. Mm. And it has been said earlier on, you have the Garda Ombudsman Commission, and we would regard full cooperation by the Garda Síochána with the Ombudsman Commission as being extremely important. And the Commissioner is in no doubt as to the views of the Minister on this issue. And obviously you have then as well the Public Accounts Committee, and the Oversight and Petitions Committee in the Dáil, and the Justice Committee that I chair myself. And then you have Dáil questions. So there are many, many ways in which the Gardaí can be brought a book, can be held to account, can be questioned. And that's the way it should be. Because, as I said, and as John Mooney has said and others there, the vast, vast majority of the Gardaí are so hardworking. And they are delivering the goods. If you look at the crime record, crime is falling in the country overall.
Yeah. And yet, Michael Finucane, is there a perception that, take the penalty points controversy earlier this year, for example, that when something like this happens, the Gardaí, do they close ranks? An investigation is carried out, yet many people don't put too much faith in that investigation, don't have confidence that the Gardaí have the ability to investigate themselves, and they simply don't believe that the truth has come out.
Well, no one, I think, who takes an intelligent view or an intelligent approach to a serious issue of public concern would ever come away feeling confident that an investigation was independent or effective when it's been conducted by the organisation who is itself in the centre of the controversy. I don't understand why the Gardaí were tasked with investigating their own use of discretionary powers. It seems to fly in the face of the concept of independence to ask the force to investigate itself. And then if it comes back, as it did, giving itself a clean bill of health, then its conclusions lack the necessary public confidence. And that's only on a kind of a general, superficial level. When you delve below the conclusions and start to get into the detail of the penalty points controversy and the way in which the whole system was operated, if one could even call it a system, any residual confidence evaporates immediately, because the reasons given, if reasons were given at all, do not stand up to anything or approaching sort of serious scrutiny. People had penalty points cancelled repeatedly, sometimes even, if I recall correctly, within the same day and maybe even within the same area. No reasons for the cancellations were sometimes given. And, and then you have probably the most damaging accusation of all, which is that points were cancelled for relatives of guards, friends, people who work with them or have contact with them, a journalist, for example. It's so damaging. It's that horrible cancer that eats away at public confidence in the police. And there's really no excuse for it. I mean, I don't know why, for example, the whole penalty points cancellation scheme can't be operated by somebody other than guards. I mean, but that concept doesn't seem to occur to anybody either within the Department of Justice, the Minister's office, or the force itself. And we end up simply back at the same situation that we had before the likes of the Ombudsman Commission was established, of guards investigating themselves and, really not satisfying anybody.
Damien McCarthy, is that far from satisfactory? I mean, earlier this year, just a couple of months ago, the Comptroller and Auditor General's report into the penalty points issue found far more cases of penalty points being quashed than the Assistant Commissioner's report did back earlier in May.
Well, you see, what you have here is again, it's another issue that raised its head over the last 12 months in terms of the credibility of the Garda Síochána to conduct investigations. Now, what you have then is you have a number of people saying that guards are doing this, that and the other for themselves and their wives. As one contributor said, look, I have had penalty points on my licence. I paid my fine and I had probably a lapse in concentration while I exceeded the speed limit. Now, as a result of the controversy surrounding the investigations, albeit from the Commissioner's side and the report you refer to, there is this wagon again saying that the guards are looking after themselves in terms of penalty points. And the way that was portrayed in recent months was damaging to the force, no question or doubt about it.
And in addition to that, it's also saying to people that the Gardaí are not the best people to investigate themselves.
Well, you still have the presumption there or the opinion that this is rife within the force. And I'm saying it is damaging. And those who are peddling that and will continue to do so to discredit and damage the force. Because I only had this conversation recently with a superintendent in Pear Street. He too had penalty points in his licence and paid the fine. But I said there's still this assumption out there that we're squaring tickets for people left, right and centre. One would imagine I'd do it for myself first, or a superintendent would do it for himself before going to someone else. No, John is smiling here at me, but I haven't heard any strong evidence from him yet to refer to something where guards have a carte blanche to commit criminal acts or discipline matters and it's not going to be detected. There are strict laws, rules and regulations governing our activity and they're laid down in the statute books.
But Damien, again, you said something which is the reputation of the force. There were large amounts of penalty points quashed. Now, I accept, I know a lot of people who are in regional command in different parts of the country, and they will argue, and some of them quite rightly, that I have a good friend of mine used to send down a unit to the local school because there was so much double parking going on at the insistence of the principal. And they dish out fines left, right and centre and get a rake of letters in the following week saying they were dropping kids off to school and apologised profusely, and he would quash those penalty points. And he used that system as a means to, I suppose, get people to comply with traffic legislation and that. And we had that debate here before. I don't think anyone was saying that every penalty point that was quashed was done so in a wrongful manner. I think that, you know, I'm not a police officer, but certainly the contacts in the police would say that, you know, it is a good thing in some ways for senior police officers to be able to use their discretion on occasions where they need to. But in saying that, there were cases where people were had their penalty points quashed because they were friends of certain people. I think some of the guards themselves disciplined a number of officers who were involved in this. It was a small number. And I think that in many ways the whole legal situation regarding penalty points maybe wasn't explained properly in terms of what people actually, the reasons why penalty points can be quashed and the reasons why Gardaí would do that. So again, when I look at that whole issue, and I'm not trying to beat up on the guards here tonight or anything like that, I think maybe it wasn't explained properly, and then I think there was a lot of different variables came into that. But it's in many ways, I think, the guards were the only ones that could do that investigation, because again, the real issue with that was penalty points being quashed without adequate forms and that kind of thing being provided as to why the decisions were being made. And if you look back at the findings of the actual internal guard report into it, the practices changed from division to division. Now, in fairness to Martin Callanan, I'm not his greatest fan, but he did introduce a new series of regulations to streamline that and to ensure that didn't happen again. Obviously, there was there's issues concerning loss to the exchequer and all that, but that particular problem was so great that it was almost impossible to investigate it. There were simply too many people involved, and you were going back over a number of years into why decisions were made, and knowing some of the people involved in it, I'm absolutely no doubt that some of them did do it for family and friends, okay, and that, or certainly were on the loop. But in other cases, they done it for quite legitimate reasons. Mm-hmm. But in many cases, I think it's fair to say these things were kind of minor issues that they deal with in a very busy week, and probably couldn't remember half of the cases involved.
I mean, the mind-boggling thing about the whole penalty points scenario then, if what you're saying is correct, John, and I have no reason to doubt you, but I mean, why does the commissioner not come out and deal with it that way? I mean, why does he not come out and say, look, I have found something here, it's clearly wrong. The way it's been done by the members of the force is all over the place. It's not consistent. So therefore, what I'm going to do is introduce regulations to streamline this. There will be a system for doing this. There will be one way. Everybody will have to provide reasons for quashing penalty points. They will have to indicate who they're doing it for, why they're doing it, and sign it and make sure that it can be checked. Why is there this constant circling of wagons saying, oh no, the force did absolutely nothing wrong, we found absolutely no evidence of corruption or malpractice here. And then we get the seeping out of example after example of absolutely indefensible uses of this discretion, which has no coherent or consistent basis.
Well, I suppose you brought on this conversation to the main issue. You're completely right. I'm not arguing against anything you've said there. And this is this culture that the reputation of the force has to be protected, and it would break, that would fall into line with the comments that are made by, in following on from Justice Smithwick, which I have to say I found absolutely astonishing, Martin Callanan's comments in relation to that, while he said he was shocked and horrified. And I do feel for Gardaí, who I know and I've excellent time for, that are serving in the Louth Division, who feel somehow tarnished by that, even though I think anyone who knows or has any professional dealings with Gardaí in the Louth Meath Division would know they're a very competent professional group of people.
And I want to ask Damien about that, about Smithwick, going back to him again. There's obviously the substantive point where he said he believed there was collusion in the murders of the two RUC men in 1989. But the more general point when he says that even today, in his view, the loyalty to the force takes precedence over loyalty to the truth. Do you absolutely disagree with him?
No, I disagree that anyone would contend that members of the Gardaí place loyalty to the force above honesty. I don't accept that because I've already illustrated. And John, you're quite well aware of the procedures that are laid down for somebody that may be in breach of a discipline matter, either it be minor, as we've already said, or serious. And there's a strict procedure set down that if that is the allegation, it's put to the guard or guards, and it will be dealt with appropriately and accordingly. Now, and furthermore, John, the burden of proof on a discipline matter for a member of the Garda Síochána is on the balance of probability. And as we've already heard from stats quoted here, guards have lost their jobs as a result of going through the discipline process. Now, so where is it being evaded? Because there's an independent body set up whom has been quite critical of the cooperation of Gardaí in the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission. But where, I've quoted the legislation. And on top of that legislation, there's a discipline procedure within the guards to deal with any allegation of misconduct.
But Judge
Smithwick has said, and I do not accept, because if you're saying that I will place loyalty to the force above honesty, then I'm in breach of something. Is it criminal? Is it discipline?
But he gave the concrete example of the way that the Gardaí treated the retired chief superintendent, Tom Curran, who gave evidence to the Smithwick tribunal. They tried to discredit him, tried to make out that he was simply not telling the truth to the tribunal. And then you have how the whistleblowers in terms of the penalty points were also treated by the senior Gardaí.
Just going back to Smithwick, I mean, I think it's worth stating, Damien, you're talking about a case where someone makes a decision to instigate one of the regulations or instigate an investigation. In some cases, investigations simply don't happen. And it's as simple as that. But going back to protecting the reputation of the force, I very much believe in upholding the reputation of the force. Some of my best friends are officers and have served with distinction in the force. But if you look at the Smithwick Tribunal as a classic example, Martin Callanan came out and totally suggested that there was no way anyone would put the truth in front of or loyalty. The allegation was but Martin Callanan has dismissed that finding by Judge Smithwick. Special Branch had in 1990, a couple of months after the murders of Harry Breen and Bob Buchanan, were running an informant in the IRA in South Armagh. This evidence was given in closed session, but it was repeated in the Smithwick Tribunal report that they had information that there was a guard had assisted the IRA to carry out those awful cold-blooded murders. Now, that evidence was given by a handler who went in and gave very specific evidence about what happened. Smithwick was actually told the name of the informant, who was in a position of, I suppose, place to know the inner movements of that particular IRA unit. Yet, in the public sessions, the Garda, as an organisation, fought off any suggestion whatsoever that there was any evidence of wrongdoing against anyone up there. Never mind the evidence that came out against Corrigan and the others and people had actually been charged and convicted in relation to having contacts within the IRA and that. And But, and that's what Smiddick is relating to. The PSNI came down and got very live intelligence on information today. It was many of these people involved in criminality on the border that stated that these people were protecting someone who had been in the Guards and had not been brought before the tribunal. And indeed, very eminent figures from crime and security went up to the tribunal and publicly castigated the PSNI for giving this information in an open forum. Yet, in the private sessions, the Guards themselves had quite openly spoken about having this evidence. And in point of fact, Pat Byrne, who was the former Garda Commissioner, was the man who actually ran a surveillance unit trying to catch the officer in question.
So what's the point, what's the point you're making?
My point is that when Smith comes out and states there is this, in the public forums, the Guards came out and said they'd no evidence for anything, known full well that they'd reams of intelligence, that there was a serious problem and had been for some time up there, even a couple of months after the murders. And that's what Smiddick was relating to. It's not suggesting that, you know, you get pockets of corruption everywhere. It happens. It's not a...
Okay, Damien, respond to that.
But I'll respond, and it'll be quite short. Judge Smiddick has concluded that the tribunal had not uncovered any direct evidence of collusion.
They didn't name it. They didn't identify that's an undisputed.
That's an undisputed fact, that there was no direct evidence of collusion. That's a firm conclusion. And on top of that,
Damien,
on top of that,
straight...
one second, John.
Yeah.
On top of that, right, it was said in the report, on the balance of probability, there was a mole as to who he, she, what rank, nothing further. So I can only quote that there is no direct evidence to suggest that there was collusion going on.
And what about,
surely,
his findings about Owen Corrigan? What about his findings about Leo Colton? If my memory serves me correct, they were serving guard officers in the Dundalk area. What he found was he didn't implicate them in collusion in the murders. But if you read the report, he certainly implicated them in other matters that are criminal and everything else, and castigated them for their activities. Now, again, certainly, I mean, there was a guard officer convicted for passing, for signing passport applications for people that were involved in the most serious terrorist offences. So in terms of the evidence on whether there was any guards involved with the IRA in the Dundalk area, so that's beyond question at this stage. What he said was that he had no evidence that he could name an individual as having assisted in these particular murders. But to sort of somehow, and I'm not trying to gang up on you or anything like that tonight, but to suggest that somehow that he gave the Guards, or that finding that he didn't name the person that he was, it was involved with the IRA, somehow gave a clean bill of health to the way that system was operating.
No, I didn't say that. No, and I didn't go anywhere near it. I didn't go nobody said anything about clean bills of health.
Well, then, what way? You said there was no evidence of collusion.
Direct evidence. Direct evidence. That's I'm quoting what was concluded as a result of the tribunal being carried out.
But should have been charged and convicted for signing passports for the IRA.
And you've just said it. They were convicted. There was nobody escaped. Nobody evaded. Nobody evaded from what you just said. Was that they were convicted. Now, who's getting away scot-free?
But
nobody.
Owen Corrigan got away for some of the activities that
and
was involved in.
All I've said is that in relation to the direct evidence of the collusion. Now, let's not forget that there was very strong statements made by both the minister and the commissioner, and that didn't indicate a clean bill of health. And I'm certainly not saying it's a clean bill of health. I'm merely repeating the firm conclusions that there was no direct evidence of collusion.
David Stanton, we haven't heard from you for a while. What is your assessment of how damaging or otherwise the Smiddick report is to the Gardaí?
Well, as I said earlier on, there are over 13,000 members in the Gardaí, and the vast majority of them are patriotic and work hard, and you know, I respect what they do, and I think other speakers there, John Munoz, have said the same. Now, it looks like, from what Smiddick has said, that the probability was that there was one, at least one person in that area who collaborated with the Gardaí or the IRA. That is appalling and terrible. And the commissioner and the minister and everybody has actually said that. And we must think of the families of the people who were murdered.
And
tonight,
in relation to his comments pertaining to the Gardaí of today, where he says that in his view it's still going on, that loyalty to the force is taking precedence over loyalty to truth.
Well, he does make the recommendation, and a number of very important recommendations. And he said, "And Garda Síochána should not tolerate irregular or unethical behaviour by any of its members, and the truth has to come first."
That is the way it should be. And that's what the demand we will be placing on the Gardaí. And the Gardaí, in fairness, will be placing that on themselves. They will have to come forward with the truth and above loyalty to the organisation. But remember something else here. Richard Haass is coming forward very shortly with his report at the end of this year on the achievement of the Good Friday Agreement. And the question of how to deal with the past remains unresolved. And that's a huge issue that we have to look at. And I'm sure that he will also be taken into account, this the Smithick report. But what happened was appalling and was awful. And again, as has been said there, some members have been disciplined severely because of it, because of activities that went on there. But we must always be vigilant where the Garda force, any police force is concerned. Mm-hmm. We have to be very vigilant all of the time.
Michael Finucane, you mentioned Morris there a few minutes ago, the Morris Tribunal into the Gardaí in Donegal. What's your assessment of Smithick? I mean, is it worse than Morris, or how would you compare the two?
I don't find, to be honest, I don't find Smithick's conclusions in relation to the issue of collusion terribly convincing. Now, I'm coming at it from a slightly different perspective, in that I was involved going way back to the sort of commencement of the process that led to Smithick, around the time of the Weston Park negotiations in 2001, and then my own family was affected because of the number of reports that were prepared subsequent to that by the Canadian judge Peter Corey. But you know, Smithick was different from the other collusion cases in that, first of all, the families of the deceased RUC officers were not themselves campaigning for an inquiry. Unionist politicians pushed for counterbalancing issues because there were issues that implicated Britain and the British involvement in Northern Ireland. So therefore, there had to be some sort of counterbalancing issue on the other side. Of the two cases that Corey investigated at the insistence of unionism, only one became a tribunal of inquiry. And ultimately, as we've seen, Judge Smithick could only say that there was no direct evidence of collusion, but there probably was collusion. And I mean, there are all sorts of difficulties with that, particularly because it's a tribunal that took place within the context of other issues of collusion, like Pat Finucane, Rosemary Nelson, Billy Wright, and Robert Hamill, where the evidence was much more compelling, and Smithick sits uncomfortably within that dynamic. And then at the end of 8 years, all he can really conclude is that there was probably collusion. So, I mean, I don't know that I would have been so quick as Martin Callanan was to apparently accept that finding. But equally, I mean, it is frustrating and, you know, bordering on laughable that he should immediately reject the suggestion that the force prizes its own members above everybody else, or prizes loyalty above honesty, because frankly that is a feature of police forces across the world. And what An Garda Síochána really needs to start realising is they're not perfect. In some ways their force is no different than anybody else. But by coming out and rubbishing criticisms and not responding to criticisms or engaging with criticisms, they make themselves look as though they think they're above everybody else. And that is a fundamental problem that An Garda Síochána not only isn't dealing with, but if it doesn't deal with, it's going to lose what confidence it has from Irish society.
Damien.
Well, I think it all boils down to the fact that you're looking at, and I think I have to repeat it, since 2007 there was an enormous change in terms of the legislation that was introduced. And you still have this perception from some commentators about this blue wall of silence and non-cooperation and failing to cooperate. And as you quite rightly say, earlier on there was an appearance by members of the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission, in that there are three commissioners before an Oireachtas committee quite recently. I will debate anyone who's under the impression that there's not sufficient regulations and law to ensure that there's no collusion or wrongdoing taking place. There is quite clear, strict rules and regulations governing the force. And if you do step out of line, it will be dealt with appropriately and accordingly through the courts or the discipline process. And the Commissioner himself has commented on that before an Oireachtas committee in the recent past. So for somebody to keep bantering on that there's still collusion, that there's still wrongdoing going undetected, anyone can go to the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission if they have a complaint to make. It will be deemed admissible, depending on what its content is. From there, There's detailed powers laid down for the Ombudsman to arrest a guard, to detain them in Garda stations. This is all happening voluntarily. And when that is concluded, you go through a different process, and the burden of proof is on the balance of probability whether a discipline offence has been
committed. Just so for criminal cases.
No. When a criminal case, there has been many criminal cases concluded by the Ombudsman, whom, and I'll refer to the protest you mentioned earlier. Three guards in particular from Pier Street, a number of guards
were the student protest.
A number of guards were interviewed under caution in relation to the activities that went on that day. And when that process was concluded, the DPP directed no charge, right? Done up. No. After that process, another investigation was conducted in accordance with the discipline regulations and in accordance with Section 95 of the Garda Síochána Act. And my colleagues in Pier Street Garda Station were exonerated of any wrongdoing. Now, throughout the process, there was issues raised in terms of documents being furnished to the Ombudsman. I held meetings with local management at Pier Street Garda Station. We were incensed by what was said in relation to the level of cooperation.
I don't think that happened.
I reject the notion. And John, the Sunday Times published an article on the front page around about that time the report was published, saying that we misled the Ombudsman. I can guarantee you, no guard from Pier Street Garda Station misled the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission.
I reject
that we intentionally misled or withheld information, because what actually happened was quite extensive document disclosures were given to the Garda Síochána Ombudsman over a period of time, and every single guard, nobody had to be arrested. They all produced themselves voluntarily for interviews under caution.
When they go for interview voluntarily, they get to bring a solicitor with them. They get all details in advance. I mean, any other person, any other citizen who gets investigated for a criminal offence doesn't get anything like the consideration members of An Garda Síochána get when they're being investigated for a criminal offence. Nobody in this country is entitled to have a solicitor present during interview when they're being taken in by the Gardaí under arrest. And they usually don't get the choice as to whether they're arrested or not. They're brought in custody, detained, and they're there by themselves in an interview room. No guard has to go on undergo that. Why would you not attend voluntarily? You're in a much better position if you do.
I'm not in a much better position, because I'll tell you quite clearly, and you know very well, we have to detain people. They don't come quietly. They assault us on average 2 per day. We have to go through a rigorous process to detain people depending on the offence that's being committed. And I can tell you, you'll know yourself because you're a lawyer, that some of the matters where we
that's
have presented...
saying.
Some of the matters that we have presented for caution interview aren't arrestable offences. Take Section 2 assault, for example, or a public order charge. We will go and give the account. Do you know what I mean? So this is
the law says you're not allowed to interview them. But the reality is, if a person says, I will attend that interview and can I bring my solicitor, the answer is no.
It is laid down in the legislation that, and in an extensive memorandum of understanding and protocol with the Ombudsman, that since its inception, there was a provision given for guards whom were alleged to have engaged in criminal misconduct to go to designated Garda station. There's an extensive document where the member in charge takes over. That makes the process a lot more cumbersome if you don't go voluntarily. And I think you're well aware of that, Michael. That has never been the case.
If you go when you're asked, because you get to turn up with your lawyer and you get to bring all the materials you need, and the interview dynamic is a hell of a lot different than the ordinary person in the street has to put up with. And that's the difference.
An account under caution is an account under caution. Whether you were arrested before or after, that's what's happening. And as the Commissioner pointed out himself, and so did the GRA on numerous occasions, how many people have been prosecuted for delaying or obstructing a criminal investigation?
Yeah, but Damien, there is ways of obstructing and delaying a criminal investigation that doesn't fall within the illegal mechanisms. You know, I think obstructing an investigation is putting your hand out and stopping someone walking in the door, not I forgot to send you that document. Was that 2 months ago? Or you know, delaying something out like that. I think, you know, again, there's means and ways to do these things. And in fairness, you know, GSOC is a far from perfect operation.
You can't escape from the fact, everybody in the panel can't escape from the fact that guards are treated differently. I'll give you another example. For summary matters, The time that a guard has to prosecute a member of the public is 6 months. For whatever reason, for a member of the Garda Síochána, it's extended to 12 months. We're being treated differently than every other citizen. So where do you
but
go with justice
you know
delayed?
There have
justice
been cases
denied?
Where cases have been dragged out for so long that they can't prosecute them in the end because of what's happening. And indeed, in many cases, they're not even bothering to make representations or recommendations to prosecute because there's simply no point. As the Ciarán Boylan case showed, that they just felt that this was a total waste of time in terms of trying to have something done about the people that were involved in that.
Ciarán Boylan being Garda informer.
Well, he was, I would argue he was an informer. He was someone who was colluding with members of a detective unit. But I can say this with a degree of certainty. I was involved in that for 6 years and I know it inside out, and how a priority one international drug trafficker can have a relationship with detectives outside any sort of system beats me, but there you go. But to cut a long story short, I mean, I accept what you're saying in terms of if Garda management wants to go for a member of the force through the regulatory system. I've seen people being harassed and within the force and being targeted in after they've been exonerated by the DPP in some cases. But I've also, I think probably where I'd be most concerned are cases that aren't dealt with at all. I will say, and I don't think anyone would disagree with this, is that if a particular person in, there's been cases of young guards maybe getting involved in drug dealing and that kind of thing, that they'll be dealt with.
Well, hold on a second, John. Your reader, if you're going to make an allegation, like
there's people being charged with that.
No, but I'm telling you, and what is the, if there is people being charged with that? If you're for a second suggesting now that there's guards and participating in drugs, off with you down to the Ombudsman Commission and provide the information.
Damien, I have to burst to point out, I'm not trying to embarrass you or anything like that, but I mean, these cases have been featured in the papers. The guards themselves have had the National Surveillance Unit following members, young guards, who've got wrapped up, like other people from other professions, but in, you know, and targeting them and arresting them, and are quite right to do that. I'm not saying this is, you know, in every single station in the country, but it does happen. And there's a case, I'm sorry, up in South Dublin recently where the team of surveillance officers from South
names,
Dublin...
No names, John.
Were, no, I'm not. We're targeting a young officer who got involved in drug dealing. There's been a case out in West Dublin where there was an individual involved with an organised crime gang out there as well, was checking car registrations for them and that sort of stuff. I mean, it happens. But in fairness to the guards, they went after those individuals. And
in essence, what you're saying is
them.
That if there is an allegation of criminal misconduct, apart from the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission, that the guards, as the Commissioner pointed out as well too lately, that he himself and his senior ranking officers
but
have arrested members of the Garda Síochána.
Mm-hmm. But Damien, five seconds ago you were just saying that didn't happen.
No. You were talking about members of the Garda Síochána engaging in illegal substances. No, but if you have information in relation to the specifics of it, there is a process set down where you report it. And nobody will refuse you either at a Garda station or on the Ombudsman's office, if you have that information.
Damien, I'm not dealing with guards that are... I'm not buying drugs off guards or anything like that. What I'm trying to say to you was, and in many ways you're proving the point, because people in all sorts of life and professions get involved in wrongdoing. It happens in journalism. There's journalists I wouldn't stand in the same room as. But certainly, you know, there's not an allergic reaction with the even suggestion. You just said to me a moment ago, if you got evidence of this, and I was trying to recount how the Garda headquarters themselves had arrested these people and went after them.
Yes, but a moment ago you were saying that, you know, that...
But there are cases that aren't.
Have you confidence in the system? Is it going undetected? It isn't.
No, but the same was at the beginning.
I know, and you mentioned journalists as well. Look, there was a solicitor before the court recently.
Yeah.
Have I said all? You know what I mean? Things a judge has been before the court in the last 12 months when we said it's been a difficult time for the guards in the last 12 months. When the law is broken, it's dealt with through a process.
Yeah.
And all I'm merely saying is, if there's an allegation against a member of the Garda Síochána, either on duty or off duty, there is a process laid down.
Mm-hmm. That there is no more. That's why I don't have time for this blue walls of silence and obstruction.
Yeah, but Damien,
and some
secret cases,
army.
Just you know, again, my opening comments on this contribution to this vigorous debate. We'll shake hands afterwards. But you know, sometimes cases aren't dealt with, because it's sometimes who the individuals are, or sometimes they're connected to the right person, or maybe it's just dealt with internally or whatever. And that happens. And in terms of the reputation of force, guards, as other professions do, get pretty worked up when there's any suggestion of wrongdoing within their ranks. And I think, you know, there's kind of, I suppose, there is a belief out there that it happens. I don't believe the public don't believe that happens. I've certainly seen it happen. But I'm in no way saying, funny enough, my argument would be on these type of matters that the guards as an organisation succeeds on the basis of the good guys like yourself who are on the street, who are out catching criminals, preventing crime and helping people when they're in trouble. Not as a result of any forthright or planning by management or anything like that. You know, there are 13,000 people in the Guards. Primarily, most of them are very honourable people, and that should never be lost in an argument. But I do think, certainly, I deal with police forces in Britain and Northern Ireland, and one particular chap said to me recently, he's in the PSNI, could not comprehend some of the stuff we were publishing about the activities of certain officers. And said, you know, if that happened in Belfast, because they've learned a lot from the fallout for the likes of the Finucane case and that, that ignoring problems and covering them up sometimes, if there's certain types, certain guards or certain police officers involved, doesn't really stand to them in the long run. But that should never deflect from the great work that's been done by guys who are on the street. Because as you guys, don't get me wrong, I know guys serving in these situations, and they're the, actually, in many ways, the victims of all of these people, because they have to serve alongside them.
Michael Finucane, how far, in your view, does the Gardaí need to go to reform, and who has to lead that change?
I think there's a number of things that the Guards might look at as an organisation. I mean, they have an amazing relationship with the population that. I think even the force itself underestimates the value of a lot of the time. But I think too much within An Garda Síochána still depends on personal relationships and not enough on a professional approach. Too much depends on whether you get on with a particular particular officer personally, or whether he or she gets on with you. Or whether they're inclined to do things or, you know, make things happen. That's something that, you know, that goes right up through the force to senior level. So it's not just inexperienced officers, you know, who perhaps don't know any better or haven't maybe sort of got the tools of their trade down so well. You know, sometimes the example of senior officers is pretty poor. But there is still a really, really good relationship between the force and the population. But I think it needs to professionalise. It can't be about, you know, a local school and parking and parents writing to the superintendent and parking, you know, penalty points being issued one week and then being switched off the next week like some kind of legal light switch. There has to be, it's a police force at the end of the day. I mean, these people can arrest you. They can do things that ordinary people can't do. So if we're going to invest certain people with those types of powers and those types of abilities backed by the laws of the state, then there has to be a recognition that, you know, they're not your friends. They can be friendly, but they're not your friends. They're police, and police are different. And it is a professional job. And a good police officer is an amazing thing. It involves skill and craft and intelligence and persistence and diligence. And I come across officers like that in my professional life, and I admire them greatly. And I come across a lot of other officers who are the exact opposite, and they make my blood boil because the damage that they do, not only to the system they work in, but also the system I work in, is incalculable. And I think
I think the force needs to get into that mindset. It needs to just make the shift and say, right, we're going to be more professional here from bottom to top. So from the minute a phone is answered in a Garda station right through to, you know, a Garda commissioner giving a press conference, that the attitude is always be professional. Even if you're dealing with somebody you don't like or somebody you think may have committed a serious crime, be professional. And I think if you stick to that, then you'll have a much better force at the end of it.
Final word from you, Damien. Do you accept the need for the Gardaí to professionalise?
I accept the need that we need more guards and we shouldn't have had to try and attempt to provide the best possible service in the last 5 years with no recruitment. There's no question or doubt in my mind about the level of commitment. What I've been exposed to every day in Kevin Street, in Pier Street, in Donnybrook and in Irishtown Garda stations and in the Regional Traffic Division. The dedicated, committed. It's quite difficult for me as a rep. Even only last week, one of my colleagues was assaulted in Camden Street, broke his leg in two different places. He is a piece
Damien,
of metal. Keep it together for the rest of my life. But I'm 100%. I'm in the job I'm in because of the dedication and commitment of members of the Garda Síochána.
Damien McCarthy, John Mooney, Michael Finucane and David Stanton, thank you all very much indeed. We're back on Tuesday at 10. Till then, from all the team, enjoy your weekend.
The Late Debate was presented by Audrey Carvel and produced by Donal O'Hurley. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney and the researcher was Richie Byrne. Sound supervision tonight was by Padder Carney.